Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Level Up Human, the comedy science podcast, souping up the Homo sapien.
Hello, welcome to Level Up Human Extra with Rachel Wheely and Simon Watt. Simon, how are you?
Quarantined, but not because I've got anything wrong with me, but just by virtue of being in my house and having nowhere to go.
We're both speaking to you from our respective bunkers this morning. I'm in my shed.
Yeah, you literally are, because you're being ostracized on account of having the plumbers in. Which sounds like some kind of weird euphemism. I do apologize, but it's the, and the trains next door as well.
Yeah, it's a slightly strange time. We're recording this in mid-March 2020. The advice at the moment, because we're in the middle of a coronavirus pandemic, is to work from home and to avoid social contact. Now, Simon and I generally like to do that anyway.
So, yeah, I've been thinking about this. Like, I'm going to have to Skype in my first gig in about a week. Like, this is a genuine thing. I'm emceeing an event over Skype, and everybody else is going to be doing it. And I know my first gig is going to, I will literally be doing it in my pants and insist that everybody else who's doing it is as well.
How, we can't even get into what we want to talk about today without pausing on that. What do you mean you're emceeing a gig via Skype? How does that even work?
Well, it's for the Fame Lab Northeast Final, or North Final, I think is how it works. So these people have entered this contest and they still have to get to do their stuff and be judged, and hopefully there'll be people watching online. But it's going to be very strange, yeah, emceeing a gig over the internet. I will just assume if I don't hear any laughter, it's just like, you know, delay in the wires. It's all lag.
Let's just assume that everybody was in absolute hysterics, but you'll never know.
Yeah, just the level of laughter was so high that it overpowered the servers.
Yeah. So it's a very strange time, and it's important that we stress that we are actually taking this seriously. We are following the advice, and we hope we can keep podcasting.
Yeah, and to that end, I know this is a science podcast, but we're not going to issue any advice. If you want some best bets, go to the NHS website or the BBC website, and they can probably tell you what to do. But we are going to talk a little bit about viruses as a whole, and probably epidemics in terms of what they mean for our future. After all, we discuss the future of our species and how we might want to make it better. So where does disease play into that?
We haven't actually covered this all that much, and now it seems incredibly prescient. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, in many ways, we could argue what we've been going through is a little bit of a sort of a new normal. Like, we've been forecasting there's going to be pandemics for a long, long time. It's not a coincidence that this has been in the culture for a while. You know, there's a game called Pandemic. There is even 28 Days Later, you know, all these films, Outbreak, Contagion, they're trying to dramatize what might have become a reality. So to that end, there's good news and there's bad news. And we can think of the reasons why this is happening in the first place is because we're sort of a particularly diseased species, actually. It's one of the features of being a human.
We're a particularly diseased species.
Yeah, like, don't take it personally. So humans in our evolution have made some massive, I'm not going to call them mistakes because they're things which have greatly benefited us, but they've come at a slight cost. So if you look at our kind of viral load, the things which come into us and the pathogens we can get and our bacterial load, we've got the things that we've inherited from our ape ancestors. You know, the things which we share, even perhaps with the monkeys, the stuff that has been with us for a long, long time. That's sort of step one. That's our kind of our classic condition disease.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started doing things like farming. And then we got a whole like sort of expansion pack of diseases that came in because we were living in close proximity to large numbers of animals. And with farming also came sedentary lifestyles in terms of we didn't migrate as much. We didn't, not as nomadic.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of that, our population started going up suddenly. So what used to be the case was that a disease would come in, it would either wipe out those people who weren't immune to it, or people would suddenly become immune to it and disease would have nowhere to go. The pathogen would then die out. It had kind of killed its food source. But suddenly, as soon as you're living at higher densities and there's more people, it can kind of keep going round and round and round. There's always new hosts to travel onto. So we've got our diseases that we got from our past. Then we get our diseases that we get from animals and things. And then we get the diseases which can now be sustained because our populations are so much bigger. Fast forward that a couple of centuries, or even maybe 1,000 or so years, and now we've got a global village. So the epidemic can become the pandemic much, much easier.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a result of our success. This is the virus's exploiting kinks in our armor. It's the things which make us a success is that we're sociable and that there's loads of us. And that's one of the things they can take advantage of.
Somebody spoke on one of our recent episodes about how the human species has got to the edge of its Petri dish.
Who said that? Because that's
I actually can't remember. But it might have been you. I can't remember how and why it came up, but it's an idea that I've thought about quite a lot.
Yeah, I don't think I'd be that eloquent, but I can kind of see what they mean. Yeah, the reason why these things can spread is partly because there's so many more of us.
And just to talk about that idea of how we suddenly started living with animals when we started farming, the point of that is that pathogens use up all their hosts and they will occasionally make a leap to a new species. Is that right?
Yeah, so it's not that they say, suddenly I've eaten all the cows, I'm going to move on. It's also because we're eating the meat, and like that means we're butchering the meat and stuff, that points of transmission are massively increased as well. So a disease can become, say, in a herd or something, and spread from one to the other, and it can suddenly move on to us as well. But a thing also to note here is actually one of the bits we can work out from a sort of evolutionary biology perspective is to study the evolution of disease. There's a whole branch that we know as Darwinian medicine, and it's awesome. I love it. It's one of the ways of trying to understand what a pandemic might look like and try and prevent them in the future, to try and forecast these things.
So tell us a bit about Darwinian medicine, because that's not something I've heard of.
So it's understanding how and why a disease changes and ends up in us and what kind of effects it might have. The simplest and the kind of most important bit of it is that there's a direct relationship between how easy it is to move between individuals and how damaging you can be. So something that's noteworthy is that all these horrible pathogens that we've been getting in recent years, including this one, like Ebola, like SARS, like MERS, like H5N1, like H1N1, a lot of these bird flus, swine flus, that kind of stuff, is that they're coming from animals. And one of the reasons they're so dangerous is because they're not adapted to us. Like a virus doesn't want to kill you because that's throwing the baby out with the bathwater. You know, it's ruining its food source. It would rather keep you alive, kind of farming you for as long as possible. But if it can spread and get into a new host, then suddenly evolution has got no stick there. You may as well use up your host if you're onto another one.
Mm. Yeah.
And in fact, you even get a bit of that sort of competition. So there's a principle we call in biology the tragedy of the commons. It's taken from economics, actually. and is based on the idea of the sort of old English common. You know what I mean?
Okay, so the tragedy of the commons is where you have a shared resource system and then individuals kind of do the opposite to what they should do by using all of the shared resources.
Yeah, and it's actually kind of in people's best interests to do the worst thing on the common. That's the bit which is kind of more important.
So what you're saying is that panic buying is inevitable.
Well, no, let's scale back because we're still thinking of things from a virus eye view of the world.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so the tragedy of the commons is basically that if you've got a shared resource, the old English common in this case, it is best for you to graze as many as your cattle in that common as possible and even overgraze it and ruin it, because there's always the chance that everybody else is going to. So if you're not going to use up that shared resource, you can guarantee that your neighbour is.
So if I don't buy all the toilet roll, somebody else will. Yeah, sorry, I'm still looking at it from a human perspective because my local Sainsbury's is empty.
Okay, let's look at it from the toilet roll perspective. Is actually, if everybody else is buying all the toilet roll, the right solution for you to do is for you to do it as well.
So it is inevitable.
From your perspective.
Mm.
Yeah. So that is a tragedy of the commons. And the reason why that doesn't apply to all things in economics is you end up having laws. So whenever, I don't know, Morrison's or Sainsbury's or whatever ends up kind of rationing.
Two loo rolls per customer. Each. Yeah, which is why I send all my kids
that
in.
Happens.
I should not be allowed. It's people like me who are making life difficult, and I apologise for having had too many children.
Oh, no. Okay, so that's the first thing we've got, is that there's that tragedy of the commons, okay?
Yeah.
So if a disease can move, if a pathogen can move from you to another host easily, it doesn't matter what it does with you.
Yeah.
And in fact, there's a competitive imperative on that individual virus or bacteria that is to use you up as fast as possible because of all of its siblings will.
I see. Okay.
So in other words, diseases that can move fast are diseases that are bad. They're ones that are more likely to kill. They're ones that are more likely to do harm. A disease that moves slowly has to keep you alive long enough to keep going.
I see. Okay, so what's an example of a disease that moves slowly?
Syphilis.
That absolutely should not be a punchline, and I feel bad for laughing that much. You just sounded so triumphant about it.
It's a very good example of this because there's suggestions that you go back to the past. Syphilis was known as the Great Pox to distinguish it from smallpox. You know, or smallpox is called smallpox to distinguish it from syphilis. And
I did not know that.
Yeah, and you go back a couple hundred years, syphilis was way worse than it is now.
Right.
And there's a couple of reasons for that. The first one is that if it covers you with all these massive weeping sores, nobody's going to want to get jiggy with you.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore it's harming its own spread. So over time it evolved to become more and more silent in its expression, i.e. less visible and slower in terms of how it uses up its resource. Give you more time to, get a chance to get jiggy. Who knows if Tinder has had an effect? Maybe it's changing the evolution of these things as time goes.
I'm just looking up famous syphilis victims.
Oh, there's many, aren't there?
I mean, it killed all the painters. Toulouse-Lautrec, Gauguin, Manet all died from syphilis. Apparently Oscar Wilde died from syphilis, which I didn't realise.
Not me either.
This is the problem with Googling things as you're doing a podcast, is who knows whether this is accurate.
But it's a very good example of, like, that's one that looks like it's slowed. And actually, most of the diseases that we have in our early childhood were probably animal in origin a long, long time ago, but have since adapted to us. So in other words, the diseases which are more harmful are the newer ones, because they haven't had as long in us to kind of work us out. Again, there's that thing of the virus doesn't want to kill you.
Unless it can move fast, in which case it doesn't care whether it kills you or not.
Precisely.
I mean, it doesn't care, obviously, because it doesn't have a brain.
Yeah, but that's actually half the joy of it. That all this is done unthinkingly. But this tells us a couple of things which are really, really useful for epidemiology in terms of how does understanding how viruses move help us keep people alive? And one of the
Well,
things-
before we before we get on to how does how whatever you just said, what's epidemiology?
The study of diseases in terms of population, like how do they spread? Where do they go?
An outbreak of disease affecting great numbers.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, cool. Right, so, and that's where epidemic comes from, in fact.
Well, yeah,
epidemiology,
I think, yeah.
Epidemic. It's from Greek, epidemos. Epi means among, and demos means the people.
Among the people, so there you go.
Yeah, there you go. We're learning as we're podcasting here, as per usual.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So actually, it's just one of those sort of things that means we've got good... We've got evidence... It's a good way of trying to work out what would be good practice. If you try and take this virus eye view of the world, what can you do, therefore, to try and stop it? And one of the main things we can see in that case is to slow it. And so if you can slow it, it should be evolving to be less harmful. Okay, now, question is, how do you slow it? And things like quarantine, that was one of the ones. Things like... stopping having, I don't know, large groups of people who've got compromised immune systems all in one place, like a hospital.
And what kind of time frames are we talking about here? Like, how long does it take a virus like coronavirus to evolve?
Now, that's much, much trickier, and that's one of those things which I wouldn't even hazard a guess at. The thing, of course, that we do know is that it's kind of like populations happening within an individual. Like there'll be millions and millions and millions of viral particles within an affected person. So it's kind of like that level. Each of those can be subtly different. So evolution can happen lightning quick in bacteria and in viruses, but it doesn't mean it does. You need two things for evolution to happen. You need overproduction, so loads of them, but then you also need variation, which they'll have, and then you need selection. So selection is whether or not they spread or not.
Okay, so what might we get out of this outbreak that we can learn for next time?
So there's places here where we're being very lucky, and the main thing is that this is a nasty disease and all the precautions that are being taken are correct. And, you know, there's good reason, like, you know, please follow the advice of every government and everything that's telling you what to do right now. And please be careful and be kind to one another. But the good news is this is not as bad as it could be. Like, there are plenty of diseases out there which are far, far nastier. Like, the reason why, funny enough, I thought this was going to be a big one was because I remember details of SARS, and SARS was a really good spreader. And it was thought very much in the media as kind of like an overhype, when in actuality it's a disease where we kind of won. You know, all the control measures and everything were correct. They worked. And a lot of the things that we even learned from SARS we're implementing now. So stuff like thermal imaging cameras in airports to spot people with fevers. Some of the studies of how things like social distancing work a bit. Like, people are doing amazing traces and following where the spread from one individual to another one can happen. So anyway, that's the good news is that it's not as bad as it could be. This isn't as lethal as it could be. It is horrible that it's lethal at all for some people, but it's not the kind of thing which is maybe comparable to some of the great, great plagues of the past. Maybe. So, if we're going to learn things, bearing in mind this won't be the last of these, because we live in a global village, and because we're constantly encroaching on wildlife, and we're putting pressure almost on diseases to have to find a nice juicy host in the form of us. What we're going to see is probably some of the best arguments that have ever been made for socialized medicine, like to understand that it is to protect all of us, we have to protect the weakest among us. So in the UK, for instance, we're lucky enough to have the NHS, and it does need massively more funding than it's been receiving for a long, long time. Same goes for the World Health Organization. Everybody's been doing tremendous work, but they've been underfunded for so, so long. You compare that to, say, some countries where they don't have any form of socialist healthcare, like the US, where perhaps larger concentrations of homeless people or people who have to exist in the gig economy, where they're not guaranteed an income and therefore have to go to work sick. That will have massive effects on the spread of an epidemic.
Yes.
Like everybody who doesn't have help has the greatest potential to become a super spreader. People who can't afford to self-isolate are going to keep going to work, and you can completely understand why. And one of the things that's good news from this stuff is we will know, because the fact that so many different countries are taking different approaches or at different places in the spread of an epidemic, come the next one of these, we'll have a better idea of what tactics work the best.
Yes,
we will have a good,
and that is good.
Compare and contrast. A thing which is also, I don't know, of concern is the ideas of herd immunity are a little bit tricky. Like if it's one of those sort of things that's being done to try and buy time for development of a vaccine and that kind of stuff, that's pretty good. Another place which is sort of good news for this is that because this is from a family of viruses, so the coronaviruses are a whole big massive group, SARS and MERS are probably the most famous ones, was that whenever those epidemics hit, people started working on vaccines. So it means that people working on vaccines for this one aren't starting from nothing. They have prototypes of these other ones to kind of look at and see if there's any kind of shared immunity.
That's good.
Like, does something that worked against one of the other ones work against this? Another thing that was really nice was some proper good international cooperation that maybe didn't happen as much under SARS. The Chinese government pretty much published open access the genome for the virus straight away as soon as they had it. So people were able to start working on this very early. There were labs in Australia that were already producing the virus in the lab to get working on before it spread there.
Is that good for vaccine production?
Yeah, it's the kind of thing that's essential for the research into it. Like, you can't work on it if you don't have copies of it. And you want them in the lab so you can get, you know, a controlled, safe environment. So one of the things that's a bit tricky in terms of this sort of herd immunity idea, and this might just be my, again, a slightly evolutionary biologist brain kicking off at this, is, of course, that the more these things spread and the more humans that a virus has to replicate within, the greater its chances of mutation. So you might well have started off with one strain of this thing and end up with two or three or four. Like, the more people it is to spread within, the more variety there is within the virus population. So are we suddenly going to be in a circumstance where we can't, where vaccinations and things only work against some strains or whatever? So the longer this thing is, the longer this genie is out of the bottle, the longer it has to change as well.
Yep, that makes sense.
And the more it spreads, so the idea of going to delay rather than containment, the benefit of delaying is that we're trying to not overload the National Health Service or other health services. The disadvantage is that we're giving it more chance to do something.
Sorry, that's a train going past my shed.
The other thing which works is stuff like universal basic income, which means that people who are in the gig economy, like you and me to an extent, don't have to worry and are not going to starve. There's a saying, I think, I don't know who said it first, that the four horsemen always travel together. So that where you get pestilence, you'll get famine. Where you get famine, you'll get war. You know, all these things come in one.
Yeah.
Think of disruption. The wars over the toilet rolls that will result.
Yeah.
The lack of
pestilence over the...
It all comes back to literal, geez. So, yeah. You know, there's good arguments for things like that. We're also probably going to find one of the nice things is so many people are going to discover that working from home is fine and they can do it. So change the office culture and maybe, you know, looking after family, carers leave and stuff might change a bit, like going forward.
Yeah, they might never get us back to into the offices.
Yeah, and it will probably be fine. Like, that's the good news for all this. So, yeah, that kind of thing of people being able to look after each other and they're being like... I can just see how this is very good arguments for having a government that you can trust that if they do say stay put, you will. And also good arguments for people being facilitated to look after themselves by some of these nice lefty things.
Yes.
And the other joke, which I'm sure 1,001 people have made, it's really nice to see that experts are back in fashion.
Yes, that's very good, isn't it? We're less interested in all of the hype windmills that exist on social media, and more. I'm increasingly just looking at the BBC website to see what's really going on.
Yeah. Yeah, that's nice, isn't it?
Well, let's hope some good comes of it. And to all our listeners, take care of yourselves. And we're going to be putting out some more episodes in the next couple of weeks. It looks like a lot of our live events that we had planned in the future are cancelled. So,
yeah, we can understand that. That makes perfect sense. Bummer as it is, at least the internet cannot be cancelled. So you will hear from us.
You will definitely hear from us. So thank you very much for listening. You can support the podcast on patreon.com/levelup human. And you can find all our back episodes, of which there are over 50, on acast.com. Bye.
Bye.
That was Level Up Human, hosted by Simon Watt, produced by Rachel Wheely, and supported by the Physiological Society. For more information, go to leveluphuman.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.